Greetings. I know you're shocked that I would still be calling. No, you're not. You know I'm going to call. You know I'm going to strive to do what I can to live the commitment I made to my wife to seek reconciliation because I committed my life to her. I'm not turning back on that. You know that. Anyway, a couple things that I think you might find, I hope you find of interest. You know, one, the light thing, the oddity is it was late last night. It was after 9 o'clock, and I was kind of like, I got to get to bed. But then I suddenly realized I was 128 jumping jacks short of my 1,024 for the day. So at like 9:30 at night, I did that. I think kind of like, that's an addiction. This guy is addicted. But anyway, today, you know, as the news media throughout the world was talking about, today is the anniversary of Lynn's birth. Lynn, who died about 6 months ago. So it was cold, rainy, and so forth. And I waited till the rains basically stopped, put on a lot of warm clothes, and I did the half-mile walk to Gary's place. He didn't have any of the visitors that day. I think he actually had somebody, you know, from, you know, medical stuff came by. But I did a birthday card because my motivation was he was in love with that woman, and she was taken by death. So I suggest that one of the hardest days for him is her birthday. It turned out in our dialogue, he actually was feeling much better than he expected, but acknowledged, you know, because again, I did a birthday card for her, pointed out that of the three of us, Gary's the oldest. But anyway, because the hardest day of the year for me is my wife's birthday. It really is difficult. It is a struggle and a half. Because I love that lady. But anyway, there was also something else that hit the news today. You may be aware about this event a year ago that has really been blown all out of proportion. I remember seeing many, many months ago, somebody did a compilation video from a whole lot of people who were there. Collected it together. So you had videos from the scene. And you'll see, you know, one of the great things I saw is, I think it's like, under the dome, I believe, is where this is. There's an area where there were these pillars with a rope between them. You know, say walk this way, kind of thing. And you saw the whole bunch of the Congress critters and the staff and whatnot walking out. And then a short time later, you saw the protesters walking in. When the Congress critters walked out, polite, orderly. When the protesters walked in, polite, orderly. They won't show that part on the news. Because, you know, and, you know, there was the one woman who became quite noted, I think, because she was basically a grandmother. And, oh, look, isn't this neat? We get to be here kind of thing. Yes, there were a few people. I mean, the one guy that broke the windows was inappropriate. But, you know, some things are not shown in the news. For example, someone handed up a sledgehammer or something of that nature, and a whole bunch of people grabbed it and said, no, don't do this. You don't see that. Because there were a whole lot of people who were saying, stop this. This is going too far. But you don't see that. You don't see the video where the police remove the barricades and wave them in. But that those things are in there. And of course, the one woman who was shot and killed, there's a lot of question there about what really happened, because, you know, allegedly she was shot by a government employee. And of course, they talk about all the deaths of the police officers, including the one guy who died later of like a heart attack. It had nothing to do with this. But they attributed it to the whole point is to sensationalize. Now, again, it goes to the issue. The one gentleman, what do they call him, Buffalo Man or whatever it is? Yeah, he showed an arrogance that maybe was inappropriate. I think, is he the one who carried out the podium? The one who went into Pelosi's office and sat down? That was inappropriate. That's not something that deserves torture for. It was rude and inappropriate. The sitting at somebody's desk was rude. Taking the podium was theft. And of course, that would be inappropriate. But the other thing is, the police invited people in. There's a noted image, and even Babylon Bee continues to use it, of a whole bunch of people out front who were part of the gathering, were with the FBI. Because again, they were provocateurs in the crowd. I mean, this is blatantly obvious. So, and so many people, there's the video of one gentleman who was calling the crowd, let's go this way, he was an antagonist. And, and they let him go. No one touches him. Because I think he was a provocateur, and the provocateurs work for the state. But the important thing that, besides all the politics around this, is the big concern I have for my family, my kids, is a whole bunch of people who are there. Again, a lot of these people were simply tourists, and they got caught up in, oh, look, we're going inside. Okay. I mean, it wasn't, let's go! It's framed that way. There were those that did that, but the vast majority had nothing to do with this. But they, again, like I said, that polite crowd walking through the Capitol. But you don't see that part of it. But a lot of these people were tracked down. Why? How were they tracked down? There's the one notable case, especially, where Facebook's facial recognition software was used to find a Facebook image of this person, match it with an image from a lot of the video that was taken that day, and say, okay, we found that person. That's the world my kids are living in. So they can go into a crowd with thousands of people, and if the government says, we want you, the reason was like 700 people have been arrested, the reason they had so many of them, because the government knows you're there in a crowd. They want you to live in fear. I would suggest part of the reason that this whole thing is still is the politics trying to keep people in power and so forth. The question about was there voter fraud? Oh yes, there was. But again, as I pointed out, right now, the Republicans complain about the voter fraud, and they show the evidence. There's a whole lot of evidence. And what the Democrats will say is, look, the courts didn't say that. No, you be careful with the wording of the way the courts, it was like, we want to address it, or this not applicable, or whatever. It wasn't where the court said this is not voter fraud. But, of course, the news media will make it out that way. Politicians will. But the evidence is quite strong. But it'll go nowhere. Just like the 2004, whatever it was, the Bush versus Kerry, you let it go. And the Republicans don't complain about that because, again, Kerry won and Bush took office. Because, again, my family has been in the room where it happened. I mean, literally been in the room where it happened. So, it's not what is right or wrong. It's what side you're on and who can make the most noise. That's all it is. But anyway, but my concern is you see, one of the things, again, when I talk with some people, oh, the climate change. It's never been like this before. The amount of illnesses. It's never been like this before. And all this malarkey, you know, and the terrible weather, the hurricanes and whatnot. What happens is one of the big factors. The fires, be terrible. But if you look at the actual relevant information, what happens is because we now have the ability to get the videos and people on the scene doing the oh look, this is terrible kind of stuff, you can sensationalize. 30, 40, 50 years ago, you couldn't. But now that you can sensationalize and you get flooded with that stuff, it looks like, oh, it's getting so much worse. I've seen, for example, somebody did some study about, like, for example, the forest fires. They're actually at a low point for the last 100 years or whatever. Because there's two factors. One, I think there's a low point. And two, one of the things that's happened is because naturally you have small fires that will burn small areas and then develop natural fire breaks. And now when you don't do that because you put them out or other things, when the fires come, they don't have that natural fire break and they become larger. So, I mean, there are a whole lot of factors that are in place. It's not climate change. It's, you know, a whole lot of other factors. And then, of course, the number one factor I would suggest is that we have people with high-definition cameras right there on the scene. We have people with drones flying around and saying, oh, look at this, this is neat, I got the great video. It's not the world falling apart. It's you're being told to live in fear. But anyway, too many things. But because of the fact that this is the anniversary of the January 6th, of the Washington thing, I've got a picture here of when Jack and I were in Washington, D.C. We were at that Promise Keepers event, the Stand in the Gap event in 97, October 4th, 97. You know, with a couple million of our closest friends. I remember that day well because Jack clung to me so much that day. And one of the greatest moments, I'll repeat it again, one of the greatest moments of that day, you know, it's the Washington Mall. Well, two things. It was still great. We went to the, you know, we're at the big mall, but then we went into the Capitol building, sat in the House chamber, actually went into the Senate chamber too. But we were out front, and I have a picture of Jack in my arms out front. But while we're at on the Capitol building itself, on the outside, kind of semi high up, I saw another gentleman there, which I really wish I had a picture of him. This guy was big. I mean, massive guy. Obviously, he drove there on a motorcycle. I mean, he had the outfit and so forth. And so he had the look of this guy who, you know, would easily pass for a rough and tough motorcycle guy because he was a rough and tough motorcycle guy and a follower of Christ. And his T-shirt just, I thought, was so appropriate. Because if I wore it, it would be inappropriate. But when he wore it, it fit perfectly. Just big letters, two words, hell no. And in context with everything, it's beautiful. It's magnificent. Because he was saying no to hell. No to hell because I follow Christ. But he said it in such a way, you know, a guy on a motorcycle, perfect. I mean, it really was perfect. But the other thing, one of the finest moments, we walk to the Washington Monument, you know, the big tall thing there, which is, was it 666 feet, whatever, or the combination, the length with height, what combination 666 and so forth, because it is a Masonic. Anyway, that whole big issue. It is an Asherah pole. It really is what it is. The Vatican has their big Asherah pole, and the U.S. needed a bigger one. And that's exactly what it is. But anyway, that's another issue. But we were there, we walked around, and there was a need to use a restroom. And there was this row of 20 or so porta potties. And, you know, the way this crowd was overtly polite was just amazing, because you had this nice neat row of, you know, obviously it would have been a neat row of, like I say, it was about 20 porta potties, and there was a huge crowd wanting to use them. So in front of each one there was a line of 5-6 people, and, you know, it kind of everyone, you know, a bunch of lines in front of each, but everybody stood about 10 feet away from the door to give an element of privacy to the people in the porta potties, which I thought, I mean, if you want to reflect Christ in some subtleties, I really think that is, because it showed a respect. But I'm sitting there with Jackie, and I don't know if he was in my arms or my hand. He was probably in arms, because he was in my arm most of that day. And they started a song. I don't remember what the song was. But so here there's about, like I say, about 20 and about 100 guys or more standing in line for a porta potty. And we were singing. It was one of the most beautiful times to hear a bunch of guys sing I've ever been part of. To be with about 100 and some guys waiting to go to the bathroom and singing praises to the Lord. It was magnificent. It was really magnificent. You know, so many things happened. I don't know all the mumble jumble that was talked about, but those are the things that really sunk in. It was a remarkable time, because especially also on the bus ride there and back, the way Jack just simply, I mean, he didn't sit on his chair. He sat in my lap. It was marvelous. Jack's my son, and I love my son. But yesterday I also mentioned Emmanuel Macron, the French president, who says he wanted to piss off the unvaccinated. Well, you know, I studied this once before, but so I checked into it again today, because again, there in the Bible there is those who pisseth against the wall in the King James, and a lot of other translations, ESV, NASB, the males, you know, the Young's Living Translation, and I think the LSV also is sitting on the wall, which doesn't make sense. But if you look at the definition of the Hebrew word and of the Greek words, it's somebody who urinates. But the note I saw on the Hebrew, it's the vulgar term. You know, the article is seen several times, and I wanted to find other references. And I found an article, and I'll leave you the link. It's pisses against, or 1 Samuel 25:22, any that pisses against a wall, and 1 Samuel 24:3 to cover his feet. This is a guy who is very much into King James, but he wrote a very good article that one of the best I've seen on that. Because he makes a good case. Because one of the things I've been really trying to struggle with is we you know, obviously I discussed church, you know, the episcopos and you know, for the overseer and those kind of things and synagogue and some of the major words. But when I looked at some of the other words, again, the one that really hits me is the Phalanikos, to triumph over brother, which was kind of like, wow. Because in context, you can see the magnificence of the love in the scripture in that. And the soon parakaleo, together draw near or to mutually encourage. Just to see that and the source of that just has really blown me away. And as I point out, I'm trying to understand a little bit more. Truth is not hidden. And I'm trying to understand more of the context of that, because what does it mean? But there's so much of this, so many of the words in the Bible, when they're translated, you know, the argument is thought for thought, you know, which is what you have with like the NIV or a lot of the message and things of that nature. These Bibles that really are not good, you know, they may convey an idea, but they're not good as I want to understand the text. Because so often they'll lead you astray. And I'm really wondering, because I want to know what Christ says, not what someone has said that he says. So we can clearly see, I mean, the NIV is a great example, where a lot of words, well, and again, take the pisseth against the wall idea, translated as male. What you've done is you've taken the words that Christ used and said, no, I don't want to say that because that's vulgar. But, you know, there is the, I'd have to find it. I won't look for it right now. But like the something about like the women who are looking for men whose emissions are like horses. I mean, the Bible can get rather vulgar. There's a point to this. And do you want to sanitize it? Do you want to sanitize God's word? So you can see it in places like that. And do we see it with, again, obviously the word church? Because again, we have direct statement from King James on that. Or do we see it in so many other words that I'm not aware of yet? Again, you know, well, I want to know more of this, because I want to know not, I want to not memorize a translation and put my life into that translation. I want to know God's word. And I also want to make sure I don't sit in judgment. I have to be very, very careful about that. And that's why I want to interact with others. But most everybody I talk with about this, with few exceptions, run scared, which is most unfortunate. One last thing, and I'll leave you. I have the link already there for the article about the pisses against the wall, and I have another one. Wrongful life. New study reveals shocking inaccuracy of parental testing. The title was kind of misleading. It was a story on RT. A woman reporter talked about how some company was formed that did some kind of testing, prenatal testing and so forth, that made a bunch of claims. And then lawsuits came, and the company, I think, is gone under. And, you know, I think the woman is criminally charged or whatever. I don't know, the one who ran the company. I don't remember the details. What I remember is the way the reporter told the story, because it got to me. It really got to me, because she talked about a woman who was pregnant, and was going to have a son, at least a second child, and did these tests. Tests said, you're probably going to have a child with Down syndrome. And she did the amniocentesis and so forth in order to double check, and came back, yeah, you're probably going to have a child with Down syndrome. And I've heard this story many times by other people. Other people have had very, very similar stories. Child said, no, we're going to have the child. The child was born. He's now late 30s. He's been fine. No issues. What really hit me? The woman reporter who was talking about it said the mother who went through this was her mother. And the guy is her younger brother. You know, I remember so often the emotions I've been through involved with the Greensboro Pregnancy Care Center, involved with Right to Life, involved with direct interactions face to face with people. And sometimes it's been really, really emotional. Boy, did that story hit me today. Like I say, I'm just like Norma McCorvey. I'm 100% pro-life. The maturing in me is, again, I move from Psalm 139 to Genesis 128, be fruitful and multiply, which has cast me out of a lot of the pro-life community. And as I matured on the politics, where, again, Genesis 128, where God gives man command over the earth and the animals, but not over another man. Which is consistent with, you want a king? Fine. Here are the qualifications, Deuteronomy 17. Has anybody ever met those qualifications? Only Christ himself. So any person that's set up as a king, ruler, archon doesn't meet the qualifications of Christ himself. And then the obvious, the first Samuel 8, where he calls it a rejection of him to set up a king, a state. Because it is, it's the demos going for anarchy, indirectly, but it's basically there. So I am 100% pro-life and no longer want any laws whatsoever against abortion. Because in doing, setting up laws against abortion requires a state. And I don't want to ask for a state because that would be a rejection of God. And, you know, when I've talked with some people and I pointed them, for example, to Genesis 1:28, and they said, okay, it's clear. We can do nothing. We have no freedom whatsoever to prevent children. And some people have told me they repented. What can I say? I remain 100% pro-life. And the thing that really hurts is after I made that comment to my wife, where reconciliation seemed to be hinted at by her, and I made the comment, we would really see that by a 10th child. And then she went to the state. Or her words, abortion of the heart. I'm obviously, I will contend, I'm 100% pro-life. Be very frank, my wife isn't. I love that lady. I'm not going to lie to her. I love that lady. Dorothy Jane, I love you. And I want you back.